Let's go back to Ireland in July 1985 to a small village in County Cork and the summer when the statues moved.
Look at our head now.
No.
Our head is moving now.
It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and in today's podcast, we're remembering the moving statue of Ballinspittle and talking about the changes to Ireland and our attitudes towards religion in the 40 years since. And with me here in the studio is Patsy McGarry, veteran religious affairs writer and author of the brilliant recent memoir, Well, Holy God, My Life as an Irish Catholic Agnostic Correspondent. You really like that word veteran, don't you, Patsy?
I absolutely love it. I love being considered old, very old.
It's up there with legendary. Yeah, it's
younger than the, older than the Pope. The Pope is younger than me now.
Patsy, let's take a spin back in time together. Let's go back to the year 1985. Set the scene for us. What was happening in Ireland and in the world at that time?
It was a terrible summer. It lashed most of the summer. Something we're not unused to in Ireland. Thankfully, this year seems to be somewhat different. Ireland was a very closed-in place at the time, very fraught. The year before, you had the Kerry Babies case where poor Joanne Hayes was accused of having been the mother of two children, twins, both found separate places, one on the farm where she came from, one many miles away in Carrasaveen. And the guards argued that she was the mother of both children. Now, we all know that wasn't true. Shortly beforehand, had the abortion referendum, which was an extremely fraught case, which outlawed abortion in all circumstances in Ireland and was led by a very, very strong pro-life right-wing Catholic movement. That same year too as well, people today would find it difficult to believe that for the first time contraceptives were made available to people to buy over the counter. Up to that, and only from 1979, you could buy get contraceptives only on prescription and only if you're a married couple. That was Charlie Hawley's famous Irish solution to an Irish problem introduced in 1979, actually just before Pope John Paul visited Ireland that year. It was a very narrow country. Anne Lovett died in a grotto, ironically, in Granard, County Longford in January that year, giving birth to a child. So Ireland was fraught with religious issues, conservatism versus emerging liberal forces. Still about 80 to 85% of Irish people were going to Mass every single Sunday, very high by even Catholic standards internationally. So Ireland was in the middle of a breakthrough in terms of change. It was a pivotal moment. And on the more happy side, July was the month of Live Aid, when Bob Geldof led what was probably the greatest rock concert in history from London and from Philadelphia simultaneously, which is currently being commemorated on the BBC with some great programmes, actually, and they've broadcast a lot of the footage from those concerts too. Bruce Springsteen came to Slane that particular month as well. That was the happier side of it.
You talk about that liberalisation of the contraceptive legislation, and people will remember that was the summer that Des O'Malley was expelled from Fianna Fáil because he refused to vote against the government when they were trying to introduce that legislation to liberalise the sale of contraceptives. I mean, the church still had huge influence and a huge grasp on people's lives and people's thinking.
It was very, very powerful, very, very dominant. He made his famous This is a Republic speech. He went on to found his own political party later on that year, the Progressive Democrats, which is a little more liberal in terms of social policy, though fairly conservative on economic policy. Ireland, if you like, was at a crucial point. I mean, old Ireland was beginning to be challenged by very serious liberalising forces, and there was deep, deep resistance to this. For instance, it was the following year that the first divorce referendum took place in Ireland. In 1986, and it was heavily defeated. People forget that. 10 years later, it went through narrowly by about 10,000 votes. That's an indication today, looking back, of how tight was the control in Ireland where the Catholic Church is concerned, and the loyalty of the people to the institution itself, as manifest through weekly mass attendance.
When you think about it, Archbishop McNamara, who was in Dublin at the time, I mean, his speeches from the pulpit on divorce, they were making front page news.
Not just the Archbishop of Dublin, but bishops throughout the country. They held the line very, very hard and fast on traditional Catholic values. And they were a powerful force in Ireland, very, very strongly so. And would remain really that until 1992, when the story emerged about Eamon Casey having fathered a child.
I mean, in Ireland, we talk about our relationship with religion, but I do think we had a particular relationship too with Our Lady. I mean, we had always, I think, gone to Fatima and we had gone to Lourdes, but we had Knock. Yeah. We had our own particular apparition here in this country. And we venerated her, didn't we?
Well, people still do. I mean, Our Lady appeared in Knock 1879. Don't forget, that's why Pope John Paul came to Ireland in 1979, the first time a pope ever visited this country in the history of Ireland and indeed in the history of the Catholic Church, an enormous event in the life of the Catholic Church in Ireland, or indeed in Irish society generally. There was huge devotion to Mary. I mean, it went back, if you like, to the Marian year of 1954, when Pope Pius XII announced that as the Marian year, and there are many men of a certain age, up around 70, who are called Marian, including my brother of my own. And it was a gift to me as a child that my brother Sean was called Marian as well, because as a vehicle of abuse as we grew up. But and that was to commemorate the declaration of the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception in 1854. So Mary, I mean, in the 19th century particularly and afterwards, has featured very largely in Catholic theology and still does. And of course, the Irish, particularly Irish folks of that, was Knock, where she appeared in 1879 to about 19 people on a very wet August night in that year on the gable wall of the church in Knock, which is still there. It was tested, if you like, by the Vatican twice since then, who accepted or verified. The church, to be fair, has always been very wary about these alleged apparitions and treats them with extreme caution and rarely is inclined to jump on the bandwagon. But in Knock's case, it believes in the authenticity of what happened there and took on board the evidence of all the people who saw the apparition.
Okay, take me now to a small community in County Cork called Ballinspittle. What happened there this week, 40 years ago, Patsy?
Well, two young girls and their mother were coming home by there one evening in July of that year, and one of the kids thought she saw the statue move. And the others looked at it as well, and they did too. So they began to pray, and they prayed there.
And this was in a grotto?
It's a little grotto, which is still the same, much the same as it was in 1985. It hasn't changed. And the word began to spread, and it spread very, very rapidly. And soon people were turning up in their hundreds, then in their thousands. I mean, it's alleged that about 15,000 people appeared on one occasion there as well to pray and to watch and to see if they could, if it was moving, including a very infamous or controversial politician at the time, Conor Cruise O'Brien, who went down and it didn't move for him. But then he was an agnostic, and why would it move for him? No, many people saw it move. Other people didn't see it move. It got to the degree that a group of researchers from a UCC science department investigated it and concluded that it was subjective. In other words, to do with retina and the way people's eyes responded at a particular time of the dusk in the evenings, and that the movement was in their eye and not of the statue.
Sort of more like an optical illusion.
Yes.
But let's have a listen to Patricia Bone, because she was one of the people who saw the statue in Ballinspittle move. These were her memories 30 years later.
Well, first of all, I saw the statue moving in and out like this, swaying back and forth. And then it went from side to side. Her face changed into the face of our Lord, like the Sacred Heart, the picture of the Sacred Heart that we have in our homes, you know. And then after that, a face of an old man with a beard, as I said, which I thought looked like God the Father. And then after that, Padre Pio. And it was just like slides passing over Our Lady's face.
And prior to that Ballinspittle incident, there had been other visions, movements.
Mount Mellery in Waterford.
Earlier that year, hadn't
there?
Yeah,
absolutely. Mount Mellery. There were 30 altogether, approximately. Mount Mellery in Waterford attracted a lot of people as well. There was one in Sligo. And it was like a phenomenon that just gripped the country. And suddenly these apparitions popped up practically, I won't say everywhere, but mainly in the south, actually, too, which is also significant. Our Lady doesn't seem to have time for Northern Ireland.
I'm sure
it doesn't apply to Donegal, Ciara.
Forgotten Donegal, let's not go there today. But what was it that people were actually seeing?
Visions of the Virgin Mary, mainly. And some people, like later on in 2009, visionary Joe Coleman took messages from her. But that was not a feature of 1985. There were just the movement of the statues of the Virgin Mary, wherever these people claim to have seen this.
What people were actually reporting was the statues appearing to move or sway spontaneously, or her hands moving, or the lights, you know, around her head, the halo almost, those lights flickering. Isn't that it?
It was mainly to do with the lights around her head, which really led the scientists in Cork to contribute, said that that contributed to what was an optical illusion as far as they could determine it. Weeping too, yes, she does weep. Like in 1994, in Grange Cong in County Wicklow, a woman there, Mrs. Murray, postmistress, maintained that her statue of the Virgin Mary was weeping. And I went out among other journalists to check this out. And you could see this stream down the statue's left eye, this brown colouring. So there's no doubt about there was something there. And people began to gather there and began to pray there, etc. And then the Portuguese manufacturer of the statue was asked about this, and they investigated, and they concluded that it was resin that they'd put into the eye that melted under a certain temperature that created that effect of weeping. I don't know if you remember the famous episode in Derry Girls, but whenever I talk about this subject about the Virgin Mary weeping, I cannot help but go back to Derry Girls and the dog, and I'll say no more.
And anybody who's watched Derry Girls knows exactly what Patsy was talking about. And if you haven't, you need to go and watch that particular episode. To go back to this summer of 1985, people were not only saying that they saw her move or they saw the lights flickering above her head, but they were also, Patsy, attributing miracles themselves.
Yeah. You see, Ciara, as apart from the religious aspect of Ireland at the time, it was a very difficult time in Ireland. We had double-digit unemployment. We had double-digit interest rates. People, young people trying to buy homes were in severe difficulty then too, because they were paying huge interest on loans in not very well-paid jobs. It, if you like, it began the phenomenon of two couples both working, having to work to pay for their homes. But at least then they could get homes to buy, you could argue. And that contributed into this mood. I mean, a year after the thereabouts, Gay Byrne was talking radio about Ireland being banjaxed. We should all go to Australia. Forget about this country, abandon it entirely. There was that pressure as well. Whether that was pushing people into looking for something else or not, well, that's a study for psychologists or sociologists, I can't tell. But I don't doubt the mood contributed to people's desperate need for hope and for seeing something else or getting help from somewhere else. And in those times particularly, and probably still today, people turned to religion.
Well, there was one lady from Cork City. She said she got her hearing back here. She had never heard her children speak until she was here at the Grotto. She was deaf for 17 years and she heard the Bells of the Angels being played here at the Grotto.
And there was another individual, wasn't there, who claimed that he'd been paralysed by a stroke and that when he turned up to see one of these moving statues that his body was healed. I mean, this is what people felt.
And it is not peculiar to that year either, Ciara. People still experience what they believe are miracles in Knock and in Lourdes. And I mean, when you listen to those voices, you cannot doubt the authenticity and the beliefs of those people, which is why, even though you may be very sceptical, or I might be very sceptical of these apparitions, it helps people, undoubtedly, whether it be physically through miracles like getting hearing back and being able to walk again, or psychologically, stroke spiritually. So I'd be loath to make fun of it, if you like, in that sense. Though it can be times very, very difficult not to.
Well, the thing I think you would laugh at is the Grotto Burger. I mean, people will find any opportunity to make a penny. Tell me about that. Tell me what was happening at Ballinspittle.
The entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, these guys, when the crowds gather, everything else follows. People need to eat. People need to drink. So you had what became known as the burger vans producing Grotto Burgers in Ballinspittle to feed the people and supply drinks and whatever. And that's what happened down there too. I mean, you could go to Knock every year. In 2 weeks' time in Knock, at the end of August, you'll have thousands of people gathering for the Novena there. It happens in Galway for the Novena, or the cathedral every year. Crowds gather, food follows. Food vans follow, whatever.
It was ordinary, everyday Irish people with faith who, you know, saw these moving statues. But there was huge media interest in this story, national media and local media interest. I presume that's how the story initially spread.
Not only national and local media, but international media. The BBC went down there as well.
What was their take on this?
To be very fair, they were very, you'd imagine they'd be there to mock, but they didn't. They took a very sober view of the whole thing and presented what were very detached reports about what was actually in front of their eyes or filmed in front of the cameras, without tone or without comment, which was surprising. Because you would imagine at the time in particular, where relations between us and the UK in particular weren't great, that they would have seized on this as another example of the mad Irish. But they didn't.
Since that first sighting in July, more than 250,000 people have flocked to see Ballinspittle's moving Madonna. They come from as far away as Dublin and Belfast in special coaches laid on for the pilgrimage.
And in fact, it was that later that year that the Anglo-Irish Agreement was concluded between Thatcher and Garrett Fitzgerald. I'm not saying moving statues contributed to that, but that was the climate leading up. The climate leading up that in terms of political relations between Ireland and England were not good. Between Thatcher and Garrett Fitzgerald were not good, because we had a new Ireland Forum here. It sat for a number of years, brought out certain proposals about what should happen on the island of Ireland in terms of political solution. And famously, Maggie, just at the press conference, said, "That is out. That is out. That is out." She completely dismissed it. But they do say that afterwards, it was borne in upon her the enormity of what she'd done in terms of the impact on Ireland, and that they believe helped to bring her around to signing the Anglo-Irish Agreement, which in ordinary circumstances many people believe she wouldn't have done so at all, because it conceded a right to the Irish government to have a say in Northern Ireland.
And the church at the time, Patsy, they were reluctant, I think, to approve these visions.
Very cautious about it, as indeed, to be fair, has there been their pattern wherever alleged apparitions take place throughout the world, not just in Ireland. I mean, it took them a long time to be convinced about Knock. And as I said, there were two separate commissions, one shortly after the apparitions there, and again in the 1930s, when people were survivors who had seen this were pretty severely interrogated, and there weren't that many left in the 1930s, but they were. And they did, basically, on the basis of the evidence they accumulated, accept that something had happened there.
The Bishop of Cork, Michael Murphy, this is what he had to say.
Well, in regard to the phenomenon, if we call it that, it's not possible to give an extempore or off-the-cuff approval or disapproval. For one thing, the facts are not very clear. Some people describe certain kind of movement of the statue. Others tend to see, allege that the face of Christ is superimposed on the statue. So that, as I say, the facts are not too clear. And then there are people who don't see anything at all.
Ordinary common sense. He wouldn't actually visit the grotto himself in case it was seen as an endorsement. And they never did actually endorse.
And something more recently happened with the House of Prayer in Achill, where the Bishop, Archbishop of Tuam, was concerned. The first Archbishop dealing with it was Joe Cassidy. He left a room for doubt. But his successor, Michael Neary, did not. He was quite dismissive of it. So they always adopt a very cautious, reticent position on alleged apparitions everywhere. Medjugorje is another example. It has never really got the full approval of the Catholic Church, though huge numbers of people from here as well go over there. It took a long time for them to respond to Lourdes and to accept that the Virgin Mary had appeared there as well, to St. Bernadette, as she became. So they, to be fair, they don't, and same in Fatima. So they don't rush into it, because I suppose they have to be careful in case it is exposed as a fraud or whatever, and some of them indeed have. Another feature about it, of course, is that these apparitions only happen in Catholic countries.
Kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, but is the Virgin Mary that selective when it comes to the human race?
Well, she's probably just trying to remind her own. Yeah. I'm still here, don't forget about me.
Don't forget.
What could be doing with the visit? So,
there's a full chapter in the Quran on Virgin Mary. Muslims believe in her. I mean, it's not just Christians who do. But she doesn't appear to Protestants. It means they're wrong, of course.
Patsy McGarry, I think you're trying to get me in trouble today. I mean, the story has lived on. I remember it clearly from my own childhood. I remember my mother talking about this time and everybody tuning into the news at night at 6 o'clock and at 9 o'clock and looking at the footage that RTÉ had recorded in the hope almost that you would see something, that you would see something moving. Terry Wogan visited Ballinspittle in 2010 for his BBC series, Terry Wogan's Ireland. Let's take a listen to that.
It's been an extraordinary place. I the only way I can describe it to you is that, like, I can touch Terry Wogan. I know that's you, because I can touch you. But by the same token, there are things out there that we can't either see or touch. But that's where the bit of faith comes in.
The statue continued to attract the crowds for more than 4 months after the initial sighting, but you have to remember, back in 1985, Ireland was one of the most devout Catholic nations in the world, so it's not hard to understand how an alleged miracle like this might gather momentum amongst the faithful.
Would it gather momentum amongst the faithful now, do you think,
Pat? I doubt it very much, Ciara. I think if it did, it would be among a very small grouping. But there's also another fascinating phenomenon about this. It all ended very quickly.
There has been nothing since like this.
No. No, nothing like 1985. I mean, the fact that we are talking about it 40 years later illustrates the fact that it was such a phenomenon. I mean, there were even commentary 10 years ago about it again, and indeed 20 years ago. And so it has every the fact that it created such a furore, it does illustrate how comparatively rare it is as an event.
Let's finish up, Patsy, with some thoughts on faith in Ireland today. Are we a secular country? Is there evidence that people's faith is coming back, do you think?
It's claimed that younger people are beginning to feel differently about faith in general rather than necessarily the Catholic Church as an institution, or indeed the churches generally as institutions. I think all the churches are struggling at the moment. I mean, the Archbishop of Canterbury, head of the Anglican Communion, had to resign last year in relation to mishandling clerical child sex abuse cases. But faith is strong and faith is separate, and that's what's happening in Ireland anyhow. Since 1992, when it was discovered that Eamon Casey had a son, I mean, that really affected the faith of a lot of older people. Initially, faith. Then they've separated out the faith from the institution. And what they're doing now is they're holding on to their faith. They're not necessarily expressing it in the same way by going to Mass on Sundays, but they are going to Knock, and they are going to Crowpatrick, and they are going to Lough Derg, and they are going on these walks, Camino walks, etc. type of thing. And
this is this quiet revival that
they're
talking about.
It's a different personal thing. It's a different, less organisational, less institutionally directed forms of faith. And that's the way people are making their way forward. And Irish people, I think, will do that, because we are essentially a people who are a huge spirituality in the Irish people, however you describe it, or whether you denominationalize it by saying it's Church of Ireland, Catholic, whatever, which is not. It's deeper than that.
Patsy McGarry, thank you so much for joining me here today on News Talk Daily. Patsy's book, Well, Holy God, is published by Irish Academic Press, and the clips used in today's podcast came from the BBC, RTE, Graeme Clifford and News Talk. That's it for today's News Talk Daily. It's been good to have your company on this journey back to 1985. And thanks to all of you who've liked or rated the podcast on Go Loud or whichever streaming service you use. We really appreciate your loyalty and your support. So until tomorrow, from me, Ciara Doherty, goodbye.